If you go to Pergamon today, the citadel is somewhat unimpressive compared to what it must have been like at its height in the 2nd century BC. There were a number of important monuments, many of them damaged in late antiquity, some of them thrown into wall construction, and the most famous of these are the so-called friezes of the Great Altar of Zeus, which were taken to Berlin and are reassembled in the Berlin Museum. In any case, the kings of Pergamon pioneered a distinctive architectural and sculptural form. There was a school there. The sculpture was renowned throughout the Greek world. It was the type of sculpture Romans encountered. Many have called it Baroque. It emphasized the pathos of individuals, of the situation. They're known largely from later Roman copies because the prime medium for sculptors was bronze. You would cast a bronze statue, and then the Romans would make copies of these. Every Roman needed to have his copy. The most famous were various groups depicting the defeat of Gauls. These survive in Roman copies where several Gauls have committed suicide rather than fall into the hands of their victors. These are now displayed in Rome. But they were the originals were on the Acropolis of Pergamon. They were set up around the Temple of Athena, and Athena was the patron goddess of the city. There was also the Great Altar, probably constructed by King Eumenes II. Best guess is somewhere in the 180s BC. There is a later date, but 180 seems to be correct, when he had plenty of money. And the Great Altar is apparently, again, to celebrate victories over the Galatians, but it was a showpiece of Pergamon patronage. Eumenes took an ancient form, that's the Great Altar of Ash and Mound, which you find throughout Asia Minor, and turned it into an Ionic monument. The reconstruction in Berlin is really gives you a pretty good idea of what the monument would have looked like, and we still have the foundations at Pergamon today. You came up this staircase, which had a magnificent view to the west, down the Caicus Valley to the port. You were greeted by a series of reliefs in the lower levels as you're coming up to this colonnade, and the reliefs show the battle between the gods and giants in this magnificent Baroque style. They've been reconstructed largely because we have the marks of the sculptors and the masons, and so you can kind of fit it together. It was later dismantled and put into a Byzantine wall structure. That's why it survives. And then as you got into the main courtyard where the altar proper was, there was a second set of reliefs that told about the founding of the city by the hero Telephus, who was supposed to be one of the ancestors of the Attalid kings. That use of relief sculpture as decoration to a major monument, that notion was passed on to the Romans. And in many ways, the altar at Pergamon is the visual prototype for the famous Areopagus, that is the altar of peace, erected by the Emperor Augustus, which is well known to visitors of Rome, which has been brilliantly restored. The difference between a Greek use of the frieze and a Roman would be that the Greek artists always preferred mythological scenes. These would be combats, gods fighting the giants, legends dealing with the founding of the city, whereas the Romans have this obsession with historical narrative. So the Areopagus in Rome will show Augustus and his family in a actual procession for sacrifice. And I always think of Roman relief sculptures as almost nothing more than a very pretty three-dimensional comic strip. The Romans just love to tell every event. One thinks of the Column of Trajan erected in Rome, which tells of his Dacian Wars. You know, every event is carefully cataloged. The only thing missing are the little captions necessary to tell the viewer where they are. But that notion of using relief sculpture to decorate a major monument or a temple, that comes out of this Pergamon Hellenistic tradition. Furthermore, the sculpture very heavily influenced Roman sculpture. Pergamon artists were in the forefront of Hellenistic sculpture, which I mentioned put stress on emotion and pathos, moved away from the very idealized figures that you saw in the classical age, lots of twisted bodies and combats, but also efforts to capture the personality of individuals. We got a number of sculptures from the Hellenistic age in which people of lower rank, undistinguished figures, are cast as sculpture. And this interest in daily life, interest in personality, these were all notions that fit very well with Roman concepts of portraiture, Roman notions of art. And so the this late Hellenistic sculpture fed very much into the development of Roman portrait sculpture, which is one of the great triumphs of Roman art.